to us, our partners.
Another brilliantly made promo. I don't know where they come from or who makes them, but there's a level of professionalism in them that I think the station should be proud of. What do you think, Michael Jones?
No, I think those promos are sounding pretty good on this station.
I think they're pretty slick.
I don't know who does them, but he or she does a very good job.
Really puts. You can just tell the they're so crunchy and for your ears like a piece of candy, like a marshmallow wrapped in chocolate, wrapped in something else. Anyway, look, I'm digressing here. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Though the films I'm going to talk about today, they're fairly grim.
I want to tell you that I went to get the trailer for each of them, as I told you I would, but they're kind of going to be almost useless to us. Which one are you going to talk about first?
I'm happy to talk about either.
Let's talk about the Lighthouse one, because I think even though it's pretty grim, it's more uplifting than the other film you've got for us.
Oh, okay, if that's what you think.
Well, it does seem like the second one. Look, the second one, I watched a trailer yesterday, and I'm not going to lie to you, I actually became a little bit... not teary, but I did. It's very intense, the second one.
Yes, it certainly is. All right, we'll start with The Lighthouse. I'm very tempted with The Lighthouse to actually do the whole review in my Horatio McAllister, the sea captain from The Simpsons voice.
I would love that.
But I won't. The Lighthouse, it stars Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, as you mentioned before, and it's directed by Robert Eggers, who did The Witch. And he also co-wrote this film with his brother Max. Like you said, the film is all in black and white, and it's shot in a sort of 1.19:1 ratio to make it look like one of those old daguerreotype photographs.
Right.
You know, give it that period feel of late 19th century. Now, Thomas Wake, played by Dafoe, and Ephraim Winslow, played by Pattinson, they've been left on an island off the coast of New England in the late 1890s for their four-week tour of duty, I guess you'd describe it, as lighthouse keepers. Now, Winslow, he's new to the job. He used to be a lumberjack. But Wake, you know, this is Dafoe doing his best sea captain from The Simpsons, is a salty old sea dog from way back. And Wake, he asserts his dominance and makes Winslow do the grunt work, all the unglamorous jobs on the island, whilst he does the glamour job of looking after the lamp. He also fills Winslow's head with grim tales of previous lighthouse keepers gone mad. Why he does this, I don't know. It seems a pretty bad idea, as within a few days it becomes pretty obvious that coastal life, like the howling winds, the crashing waves, the squawking seabirds, and even Wake's cooking, don't agree with Winslow at all.
Right. What does he cook? Does it go into detail on that?
Well, he cooks all sorts of crap, but he even cooks lobsters, which actually look quite nice. But even those, Winslow can't seem to enjoy.
But it might be a bit rich for his taste. I mean, you can't go straight from gruel to lobsters, can you?
I guess not, but they looked pretty delicious to me, even in black and white. Maybe Wake's other stuff wasn't very, very tasty. But anyway, Winslow finally cracks in a fairly brutal scene and commits a sin that if you're an ancient mariner, you just don't do.
Oh, I know what that is.
Yes.
Can I say it or will it ruin the movie?
Well, you can say it if you want.
Is it doing something to a bird?
Oh, you might be onto something there.
Right.
Yeah, yes, okay. Yes. And he doesn't shoot it with an arrow, I'll just say that. Needless to say, everything goes pear-shaped from there. A storm sets in and Winslow, followed by Wake, start to descend into madness. Now, it's at this point you start to wonder what the hell you're watching. As Winslow's madness takes hold, it's hard to tell if what we're watching is actually happening or what we're seeing are just figments of his twisted imagination and psychosis. Oh, look, I'm pretty sure he didn't actually have sex with a mermaid in this film,
right.
But the scene where Winslow is masturbating furiously whilst holding a small mermaid carving is fairly convincing. I think he's actually doing that. I don't know why he's doing it. And
what is he doing?
Feverishly masturbating.
Oh, feverishly masturbating. Sorry, I just didn't want us to miss the punchline there. Feverish masturbation.
Yes, that happens in this film. Look, sometimes this film is a bit darkly funny as the two mock each other's cooking and they embrace in wordplay, they dance, they sing bawdy sea shanties, but things again, they go downhill as the booze runs out and then they decide to start drinking the kerosene, which is used to, you know, obviously power the lamp and the lighthouse.
I used to live in Surrey Hills, yeah. Like 20 years ago, back when Surrey Hills was kind of a little bit rough. I never forget seeing this dude, like wino with a big old red nose, poor guy. Anyway, he was getting metho and pouring it into a juice, like an empty juice container, and then putting white wine in. It was kind of like he was making this really disgusting cocktail.
Mm.
And I never forget that. I remember it was like metho and white wine. And then he was sitting there drinking it, like just quaffing it and Yeah, I don't know why I'm telling you that story.
Was he yelling at people?
No, he was quiet. But he looked very like rough, like his nose looked like a kind of beaten up old turnip sort of thing. Mm. Anyway, I digress, mate. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. These two certainly start to look rough after a few days of drinking the kerosene from the lamp. Anyway, there's lots of screaming, lots of facial hair, lots of violence, and for this viewer, a lot of questions beginning with what the hell did I just watch and why did I just watch it? The Lighthouse, it was less than illuminating and left me kind of foundering on the rocks.
Can we have a little listen to the trailer?
Sure.
Tell me. What's a timberman want with being a wiki?
Just looking to earn a living, just like any man. Starting new.
On the run. Keeping secrets, are you?
No, sir.
Watch you spill your beans.
Okay, there's not a lot more of... It's sort of the trailer itself descends into madness from here on in, really. I recorded it yesterday and I went, I don't know if that's even worth playing. There's very little in it.
Except for the Horatio McAllister
voices. It is pretty good. Yeah, no, absolutely, that's worth it. Hey, listen, I wanted to ask you about the second film. Now, I'm going to sort of wipe the smile off my dial because this one is quite a heavy, heavy little number. I might just give you a taste of the trailer.
Okay.
It's not going to do us a lot of good, but here's a little taste. This is False Armor.
Hello, Madinti.
Okay, that's just to give you a little taste of where we're going. You're going to take us on a voyage in your review of this film to Aleppo in Syria.
That's correct, yes. The language you're hearing, I guess that's the Syrian version of Arabic there, and that's the language that you will hear throughout this film. Although director Wad El-Khattiab, or she's a co-director of this film with Edward Watts, she does occasionally speak a bit of English in the film. Now, this documentary is told in the form of a letter to Wad El-Khattiab's young daughter, Sama. It's Wad El-Khattiab's story of her experiences during the siege of Aleppo from 2012 to 2016. Like in 2012, Wad El-Khattiab was still an idealistic young university student documenting the Arab uprising in her university town of Aleppo in Syria. At first, it's just riots and running battles with security forces, but soon things start to get real as the Assad regime really cracks down and people start to die. And Wad El-Khattiab isn't coy about documenting all of that, especially the targeting of hospitals by Assad's artillery with help from Russian fighter bombers. But it's also during this period that Wad meets and falls in love with Hamza, who's an idealistic young doctor that she's been filming. Now, Hamza is determined to stay in the besieged city to administer as much aid to the wounded as he can while the siege goes on. The two end up marrying, and within 12 months, you know, Sama is born. So a bit of good news there for Wad and a bit of hope amidst really grim surroundings, I guess.
Yeah, look, I think 20 seconds into the trailer, you realise she's documenting what's happening in Aleppo and then she shows you a pregnancy test, which is, and you're like, oh my God, that would be the worst news to be in a war zone and realise you're going to have a kid.
Yeah.
And then you watch her continue to make the film and it gets worse and worse and worse. You know what? We've been talking for a month about climate change and trying to check in with all our brothers and sisters down in the fire zones and find out how they are and make sure that we are giving them support and not forgetting what happened, because we want to see some action and climate change and want to see them helped. I suppose it's the same logic with this, to be quite earnest and honest with you, mate. We probably should be spending quite a lot of time making sure that we witness this stuff, because it can go on the other side of the world. Refugees pouring into countries like Lebanon and Turkey, millions and millions of people, and we have no sense of what's happened except on news reports, which aren't even on the news anymore.
Well, that's it. Like news reports, I guess they only give you like a second-hand or third-hand account of what's going on. What's different about this documentary is we're almost seeing what's happening directly through pretty much an innocent civilian's eyes. all the while Ward documents the death and destruction going on around her. And like, if you're at all squeamish, this, I'd say this probably definitely isn't the film for you. But like you said, she's constantly debating with herself as to whether she's done the right thing to bring a child into a world where she or her husband or the child could be killed at any moment. And many of Ward's and her husband's friends and colleagues are killed during the film. This film, it's at times, it's, you know, gut-wrenchingly horrific as we watch innocent civilians, and they're often children, suffer horrific injuries and often die right there on camera in front of you. It's amazingly generous of the victims' families to, you know, I guess, consent to the filming. And then this is followed, you know, obviously by wailing and intense grief and of brothers, sisters, fathers, mothers. If that doesn't choke you up and wonder why Australia didn't actually do more for Syrian refugees during this period, then, you know, you probably have some sort of heart of stone, or you might be Peter Dutton or something like that. Look, Forsama is raw, honest and visceral filmmaking and will upset many viewers, but I think it's sort of almost compulsory viewing. And it should also leave you with some hope as well, and an appreciation of humanity's ability to survive against some, like, really overwhelming odds. For Sama, it's one of the most powerful documentaries you will watch this year, and I hope you do, and may even win an Academy Award next week. But do bring tissues and maybe bring a loved one to hold on to.
Right, okay. And where is that? Is that, is that at cinemas, or that's...
Oh, yes, yeah, so that will be at cinemas. Yeah, well, probably, you know, okay, your dandy-type cinemas. I don't think it'll be screening at your Hoyts or your event cinemas.
Yeah, but no, yeah, it won't be at George Street. Hey, listen, lovely to talk to you, Michael. We're going to get a
always
track.
A pleasure.